Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. I want to remind you all, you can weigh in, let your voice be heard each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WKAR AM 870. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. We always want to hear what's on your mind. Of course, you can give us a ring right here at Current Sports by calling 517-355-9527. And how have we been enjoying the show so far? I encourage all of the dedicated listeners out there to let us know what you like, what you don't like, and post some conversation that you would like to hear discussed right here on the show. Again, tweet me, Facebook me, give us a call here. We always want to hear what's on your mind. And folks, please bear with me. It's been a rough week for me as I am still going through this cold right here. I got a sore throat. My voice is almost, well, it feels like it's almost gone. This sore throat is killing me right now, guys. But please bear with me, folks. But it's hump day. It is hump day, Wednesday, and we've had a great few days here on the show so far with our best of Labor Day special. And then yesterday we had a pretty interesting convo that took up most of the show, which concerned the Michigan State football team and our thoughts on Friday night's game against Western, which was a less than impressive win for the Spartans, to say the least. Now, Andrew Maxwell, Connor Cook, Tyler O'Connor, Damian Terry, I mean, who is the right guy behind center on this team? Or does the problem lie with the receivers, who seem to have hands of steel, folks? Or is it both? Is it the QBs and the receivers? Well, you all certainly made your voices heard yesterday as you called in and gave your thoughts on where you think the problems for the MSU football team lie, and we will continue that discussion later on today as news was released yesterday that wide receiver Benny Fowler, that's right, Benny Fowler, he will be benched this week and replaced by McGarrett Kings. Now, is this the right move? We encourage all of you to call in 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Let us know what you think about this move to bench Benny Fowler and put in McGarrett Kings at the wide receiver position. Now, in the meantime, we invite a special guest to today's Current Sports Show. She is the head coach of the Michigan State University women's volleyball team, which returns two All-Americans to the squad and two All-Big Ten selections from a year ago. Now, MSU was selected fifth in the 2013 Big Ten preseason volleyball poll and has started off 3-1 in the season so far. Now, she is in her ninth season as the general of this squad. Kathy George, welcome to Current Sports.
How are you doing, Al?
I'm doing great. Welcome. Your first time coming on, Kathy. Thank you.
It is. And don't worry, you're going to get back on that cold.
I know. Kathy, it's killing me, man. I feel like every time I swallow, I'm like swallowing like needles right now. It's terrible. But I'm a trooper.
Okay.
All right. So, all right, Kathy, first of all, how good does it feel to be back on the hardwood embarking on another season?
It's always great to kick off the season, and you plan and plan and plan from the time you have your last whistle blown and you start to put it all together and imagine in your mind what you need to do, where it's at, and then finally it gets here. And it gets here so much faster than you even can believe, but the summer just flew by. Here we are, you know, preseason and working really hard, and then there you go. So.
Right. Now, Kathy, before, you know, you guys embarked on the preseason, before this season started, I was very bummed that I missed a very, very cool media day. Very bummed about it. Probably the coolest media day that any media member around here is going to enjoy. Now, talk about what your team decided to do.
Well, you know, we had the media out at the sand courts, and we had everybody out there, and it was our intention to kind of teach the game a little bit and get people to understand some of the skills that go into it and get our players to interact with the media and get to know them on a more personal level, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was hot out there, you know, people were sweating, you know, maybe every once in a while looking a little out of sorts, but it was a lot of fun, and I know our team really enjoyed it as well.
I got to ask you, Kathy, you were out there, of course. Out of all of the media members, who was the best player?
Oh, my goodness. I am not going to go there.
Because you know what? I got to ask because, you know, I used to be at Channel 6.
Yeah.
And Fred Heumann, of course, is a big mentor of mine. I couldn't believe when I went on the internet and I saw Fred in a T-shirt and shorts out there playing. How did Fred play?
Absolutely. He did a great job. You know, he was it was funny because, you know, he's out there. He's got those shorts out. He was he worked with everything. He was a trooper, you know. He did a good job.
Oh, my goodness. I can just imagine. Oh, my. Well, we'll get to that later. All right, Kathy. Now, last season, you all met Michigan in the regional semifinals.
Right, right.
And your guys' first time going that far in the tournament since 2007. Now,
yeah.
How pleased, when you look at that season, we'll get to that game in a minute. When you look at last season overall, how pleased were you with that season?
Well, I was very pleased because the year before that, we graduated two All-Americans who were the center part of our offense. So as soon as they left, so it was January, we started our new spring season, and with all the players returning, we were able to start to focus on what we needed to do. But our team didn't have really that one star. What they had was a lot of people that did, you know, their jobs really well and were role players and really understood that it was going to take all of us to do this special thing if we were going to go the distance the following year. And so everybody just, you know, rolled up their sleeves and worked really hard, and we really developed a great team cohesiveness and culture and everything, and so it came together. So to be able to go to the Sweet 16 and in fact beat UCLA in the second round on their home court, and they were the defending national champions, that was huge for us. And you know, I think that we extended beyond our talent level. I thought we did a really nice job and went into that, and then unfortunately did lose to Michigan, who was a team we had split with earlier in the year. But really, Michigan did a great job in that match and was able to kind of carry that forward.
Yeah, it was certainly a great ride for you guys. Now, so overall, when you look at it, Kathy, did they probably exceeded your expectations then last year, huh?
They really did, and we really didn't know where our offense was exactly going to come from. But Lauren Wazinski transferred in, and she was a two-time All-American, honorable mention in a third team the year before, and you know, really provided that punch for us there. But other players just stepped up, and Amy Dentlinger and Corey Moster got the Defensive Player of the Year in the Big Ten. Mm. Alexis Matthews has been a great story for us, a kid out of Detroit, really didn't play a whole bunch of volleyball before she came here, but what an exceptional athlete. And so they really just – everybody did their part, and they were very conscientious about it. And we did really exceed expectations at that point.
Definitely, definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with MSU volleyball coach Kathy George. Now, Kathy, when you look at that run last year, again, you guys met Michigan in the regional semifinals, lost to them. Like you said, I mean, the first time you guys have gone that far in the tournament since 2007. Now, I got to ask you, did it hurt a bit more due to the fact that you guys lost to Michigan of all teams?
You know, I cannot lie.
Right.
But, yeah, it did. But I think what really hurt about it is that we know we're evenly matched with Michigan. And, you know, it's a knockdown every time we play them, because we were evenly matched. We felt that the match could go either way. And, you know, they just had it going on. And we didn't play poorly. I watched the tape afterwards. It took me a little while, but I did watch the tape afterwards.
It took you some time, huh?
and we were there, but we didn't make some of those key plays. And it just seemed like the match was in fast forward. It was going so fast while we were there. But we just needed to make a couple key adjustments, and we didn't really answer on that. And they played well. They were getting hot at the right time. Early in the season, they were struggling a little bit more, and then they were finishing with a real hot streak. And you know, they just caught us at that time. So then that, of course, serves as motivation, right?
Oh, yeah. I can. You know, and Kathy, for all of the listeners out there, for those that you know, because we do have neutral listeners out there,
yeah.
Can you just put in perspective the – I'm going to use the word hate. Yes, hate that the Spartans have for the Wolverines and vice versa.
It's funny. It is a different – it's a rivalry, and it is – you know, there's a lot that rides on that game, and there's just so much attention that's brought around it, and it is – you know, it is – it's a fun match to play. And I know that we've both, on both sides of that, from, you know, the coaches at Michigan and Michigan State, we've both enjoyed that competitive fire that you bring to the court, and it's great because it gives an atmosphere that you want to have around your matches so that you are ready to play in the NCAA tournament. So every time we play here or there, you know, the crowds are big, the screaming is loud, and it's an intense atmosphere. And it is tough because the fans, you know, definitely weigh in at these matches. And so it is a lot of fun, and it does make us a better team, I think, come tournament time.
Without a doubt. Now, so you guys right now, Kathy, you guys are currently battling at the Hokie Invitational, losing to Pacific on Saturday, but then getting a win over Virginia Tech that same day. How do you assess your team right now sitting at 3-1?
Well, you know, we had three starters out of that match against Pacific. One of them went down during the game against Pacific, and that's not meant to be an excuse, but what it is to give you an opportunity to see that, like, it really changed the way the match was going there against UOP. We played them at 2:30, and we had to turn around and play Vatek at 7. Mm. We had a chance to change our whole lineup between that, and we didn't have that. We didn't really have that chance because we had to make some people play out of position. So we did that before the Vatek game. Went into that, we were down 0-2. And came back and won the next three for winning the title, or for winning that match. And I'll tell you what, we had two freshmen step up big. So it was exciting to see. We had two of them playing in positions they'd never played before.
And who were those?
We had Alyssa Fitterer, mm-hmm. who had 9 blocks as a freshman in a match. It was pretty incredible. It's hard to get blocks. Most top leaders the top leaders in the nation will have about 2 blocks per game. So she was definitely on course with all that, and she was doing a great job. And then Autumn Christensen had to play not only the front row but the back row, and she's never done that in the left side. So mm-hmm. she really had to make some adjustments. And her hitting stats weren't, you know, they were negative, actually. But she did a great job of all the little things. And you're being thrown in where the little intricacies of the position, you know, were really exposed. But then again, she did a nice job adapting through the match and got it together after the first 2 games and started to really come on strong for us. And it was great to see the adjustments and the way that our team fought back and just didn't give in to, hey, we're injured. You know, I liked the fact mm-hmm. that they were able to say, listen, this is what it is. It's going to be that way. I mean, every team goes through that. It's, you know, it's the way it is. People get injured, and I hope ours changes
right.
soon enough. I mean, I hope it starts changing, but right. it is what it is, and, you know, you have to fight, and we have talent on our team. We just needed to make the appropriate adjustments and get the attitude that we needed to come away with that victory. Vatek earlier in the day before had beat Pacific, so pretty handily. So it was, you know, it was an odd timing for us, but I think that we learned and we got better as a team. And that's really what the pre-conference season is for. You know, it's really to stretch you, to make you sometimes uncomfortable, and provide you with opportunities to find out what you have in the line. Like, who do you have on the bench? Who do you have in the lineups? What right. are they capable of doing?
Right, so true. And that is so – I did not know that, Kathy. That's yeah. very, very impressive. I mean, 2 freshmen stepping up like that. Now,
yeah.
you guys have Oregon coming up in East Lansing on the 6th, 2 days away. How are you guys preparing for them?
Oh boy, you know, they had a lot of TV matches last year as they made their run to the Final Four and
right.
finished up the national runner-up. I mean, they're a very talented team with a lot of key players back, and so we've been not only watching those matches, but we do an exchange with our opponents of video. And so they have one of ours, we have one of theirs, and you get together and you start to put your scouting reports together and then go through practices to make adjustments on them, and then the next night we play Oregon State, who's very talented. Mm-hmm. So it's a back-to-back type of thing, and we need to be ready for both opponents, you know, even early in this week. So just working to put it all together so that we can put it in a digestible fashion for our team.
Right. Very, very true. And you talk about Oregon, such an unbelievable team. Do you think this is kind of be a measuring stick game to see where your team is?
You know, I hope we get some players back. I hope we can see where we're at, and,
right.
and we won't know that just yet. But as we go into it, I just want to see, you know, yeah, how are we shutting down some of the best players in the country, and what are we doing, and are we able to process some of these things that we're talking about this week? Are we able to make some adjustments and really see how they can carry things through this year? You know, because right now we'll have a lot of young kids out there. Go ahead and see how they're able to take this scouting report and use it to our advantage and see how that comes together. And then, again, turning around and seeing how that happens, because it is difficult to take such two teams that are so very quality to turn around back-to-back and be ready on the next day. And there's going to be a lot of excitement around here with the football game on Saturday as well.
Yeah.
And for some of these newbies, that's a whole other thing. So getting them to see that, take the information, and then, you know, and then get back with the same mindset the next night, that's going to be really important to see how they're doing. It's all a process in my mind. It really is. Like, all this stuff has to happen to get us just battle ready as we proceed through the league. You know,
wow.
how are we going to be able to develop this foundation for us for the future?
Without a doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us to Current Sports, we are talking with MSU volleyball coach Kathy George. Now, Kathy, I want to shift gears really quick.
Sure.
Something that I think is so admirable throughout your history, Kathy, is the impressive resume that your kids have in the classroom. Now, you've had 40 academic all Big Ten selections and 7 Big Ten Distinguished Scholars during your time. Now, can you talk about that and the importance you obviously place on the books as well?
You know, it's I have quality girls. I mean, that's it's not really that I'm this wonderful person, but you know, I just think that our whole team exudes that kind of attitude in the classroom, and that's been really positive for us, because when you have teammates that are working as hard as you in the classroom, it just makes for a great environment. So when we're on the road, you know, they're studying together, they're talking about different subjects, they're doing those kind of things, because they know they have to come back and be ready for class on Monday. But we have last year we had a 3.28 GPA, and what's sad about that is it's like fourth on the women's side in Michigan State. You know,
really,
like, what do we need to do? You know,
wow,
it is. I mean, there's some impressive GPAs here, and so you know, but we think they do such a great job, and they really do work hard, and just kind of come together on that, but. I've been really, really blessed with good kids coming in and that value the classroom as well.
Yes, that certainly helps, Kathy. Now, Kathy, I want to also shift gears into this aspect of things. Now, you are the first college coach that I had the opportunity to ask this question to. It's been a – yeah, I know, right? You're the first one. You're in the hot seat right now. Don't get nervous. It's a pretty – so just lay back and just be honest with me here.
Okay.
Now, Kathy, you know, this has been a debated topic for years and years and years, but it's really come to the forefront due to a few situations which you know about. What is your opinion when it comes to college athletes getting compensated in some way, shape, or form? Of course, you know about the Johnny football situation.
Right.
He had to sit out a half game due to his involvement. They couldn't find any, quote-unquote, hard evidence to pin on him. What is your opinion on that?
Well, you know that's a good question, and I haven't really thought deeply about it, but I think it's a very difficult position for colleges to be in because of the money situation. There's only so much money, you know, to go around right now, and it's very difficult. And so, yet you see universities prospering, you know, through these athletes, but it is an avenue for athletes to go beyond as well. And being provided an education is a wonderful thing, and this experience is second to none. I think that being a college athlete is a wonderful time of your life, and it's something everybody should treasure, and it is a great experience. You know, dealing with where you know, players feel that they haven't been compensated for what they're giving to the university, that's kind of a gamble when somebody comes in, right? We don't know that definitely
right.
Coming in, that this is how it's going to turn out. I mean, sometimes, you know, for every kid that you sign that you think is going to be, you know, an All-American, there's somebody that didn't. And so, you know, you don't know. And I just don't know how can athletic departments pay that, you know, across the board. That's going to be so expensive with these budgets being so high right now as it is. You know, I don't know. I really don't have an opinion. I'd have to, you know, really talk to people in key positions more to understand, because I'm one of those people that like to look at both sides of it and really get the true understanding before I would make a comment one way or the other to say that I'm in favor or not in favor.
I
see both sides, but I'd need to gather. Once I get in season, man, I am tunnel vision. So
right.
Honestly, I really, you know, although I've heard about some of that, I really haven't been paying attention to some of that. So, you know, you hear different things, and I just really, truly don't have an educated
right.
You know,
gotcha.
Opinion.
I feel it. Well, Kathy, I appreciate your honesty. I love the answer. It was a great answer.
I don't know.
A politically correct answer, but I love it. I still love it, Kathy.
Okay.
All right, now, how can people follow the Michigan State volleyball team and get out to some games? Support you guys.
Hey, you guys, we'd love you all to come out for the games this weekend, because we play at 7 o'clock both nights. You get in free to the Saturday night game with a football ticket. So come right over from the football game right here to the Oregon State match. And Oregon match is, I think it's going to be really heavily attended, and it's really exciting to see one of the best teams in the nation coming here, which you do, by the way, all the way through the Big Ten season.
Right.
Every night you've got somebody. We have three teams in the top five in the country. So it's like coming out and seeing the best there is. on the highest level play. And, you know, just getting out here and supporting us is great. Just come on over to Jennison Fieldhouse and look online, you know, on the website, and you'll see our schedule. And come on out. It's, you know, it's relatively inexpensive, and you can bring a family. And it's such a great family atmosphere. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a kids club where the kids get lessons before the games, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And people just have, you know, the freedom to move around a little bit, and it's a lot of fun. So we'd like to see everybody out.
Yes, it is. The always classy MSU volleyball coach, Kathy George. Kathy, I cannot wait to cover you guys, and I look forward to the season. I've definitely got to have you on the show as the season goes on, and I wish you all the luck
Absolutely.
In the world.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you so
Bye-bye.
Much, Kathy.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Kathy George, Michigan State volleyball coach, Kathy George. Right now, they sit at 3-1. Again, it's the preseason. They get things started up very soon here against Oregon, again on the 6th in East Lansing, Michigan at 7 p.m. You want to check out that game. Again, Oregon, really a powerhouse when you talk about college volleyball. They will be in the house on September 6th. Again, it's 2 days away, this Saturday, actually. You don't want to miss that game. It'll be a fun one. It should be a fun one. All right. Well, when we return to current sports, we'll dive into our current sports section of the show. Want to let you know that we'll be taking your calls after the break. Don't hesitate. Pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Let us hear your thoughts on any of today's topics. We want to hear what's on your mind. Stay tuned. More current sports is coming right at you.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, James Franco is bringing William Faulkner's famously complicated novel, As I Lay Dying, to the big screen. How have screenwriters past and present tackled ambitious adaptations?
A novel is not structured like a movie, so you have to give yourself liberty to really make changes for stuff that fits the cinema.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Hey, good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all the latest sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. I am joined by production assistant Alex Sharg right now. We just finished talking with Kathy George, head coach of the MSU volleyball team, as they get ready to play one of the best teams in the nation, one of the best college volleyball teams in the nation, Oregon. Again, at September 6th at 7 p.m. You don't want to miss that one. So, yeah, and then after that, they play Oregon State on the 7th. So Oregon and Oregon State coming up for the Michigan State volleyball team. You don't want to miss that. All right, Alex, you ready for these topics, man?
Let's do it, Al.
My voice is killing me right now. Maybe I need to tone it down. Maybe I need to tone down the energy a little bit, rest my voice a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, after that debate the other day, you definitely need to tone it down, Al.
You know what? That was a very – and thank you for all who called yesterday. That was an interesting debate as we talked about the MSU football team, what's working, what's not working, what needs to change. And we're going to talk about them as well today because a big move was made by the Michigan State football team yesterday. So, all right, the Tigers, the Red Sox, they won the second game of the three-game series in a 2-1 victory against the Tigers, evening the series up right now at one game apiece. Now, Boston ace John Lester, he outdueled Max Scherzer and retired Miguel Cabrera with the bases loaded. It ended with the Tigers' right-handed Max Scherzer. It ended his chance to become just the second pitcher to open a season with a 20-1 record. Now, Scherzer, who is now 19-2, he won his first 13 decisions. He lost for the first time since July 13th when the Texas Rangers beat him 7-1. He went on to say after the game, quote, "For me, it's a team thing. If I win 20, it's a team achievement." Now, Roger Clemens is the only pitcher to start off at 20-1 and ended up 20-3 with the New York Yankees in 2001. Rube Markert, he was the only pitcher with a 19-1 record, but lost his next decision in 1912 with the New York Giants. The Tigers lost for the second time in six games, despite the return of Miguel Cabrera, who missed three games with abdominal and groin problems. He went 0-4. Hey, Alex, you know, when I look at this man, I look at it and say, hey, you know, Max, he's not perfect. And you know what? It was really interesting because after that game yesterday, Tigers manager Jim Leland, he was pretty upset with the whole, I guess you can call it a cop-out excuse for the reason why Scherzer is 19-2, but for his incredible streak that he's been on all season, saying that, you know, because Scherzer, statistically, he gets the best run support in baseball. And when that was brought up to Jim Leland, he just kept getting brought up during his press conference after the game yesterday. He was a little heated. He was a little upset about that. But, you know, I mean, it's still an incredible accomplishment what Max Scherzer has been able to do this season.
Oh, absolutely, Al. And the other thing about Scherzer in that game the other day, the Tigers had more hits than the Red Sox, left more on base, still lost 2-1. So yeah. It really isn't Scherzer. It's just the fact that, hey, you got to look at baseball sometimes and things just don't go your way.
Yeah, that's how it goes. That's how it goes. I mean, any game can bring about anything, you know, and Max Scherzer certainly still 19-2 is unbelievably impressive, folks. So let's not harp on it. All right, the big news in Sparty land yesterday came from the Michigan State football team. Now, Michigan State sophomore receiver McGarrett Kings has been promoted to a starting receiving role, while senior Benny Fowler has been demoted to a backup role as of Tuesday morning. Now, Fowler led Michigan State with a team-high 12 targets in the 26-13 win over Western Michigan on Friday night, but the senior had three of the receiving corps' six drop passes against the Broncos. Now, Fowler finished with three catches for 36 yards against Western, including the 26-yard reception, which was the longest play of the game. A 26-yard, the longest play of the game for Michigan State. Come on, man. Fowler, who led the team with 524 yards and was second with 41 catches last season, admitted his play was sloppy Friday night and attributed his performance to, quote-unquote, jitters. Jitters. Kings was targeted four times, had one catch for 14 yards, and drew a pass interference on a deep ball thrown by Andrew Maxwell. Wow, a deep ball thrown by Andrew Maxwell. I never say that. That's in this. Yeah, I say that in the same sentence. At the quarterback position, Andrew Maxwell is listed as end quote or end quote with Connor Cook in the number one position behind center. So
there you go.
Do you think that this is the right move right now for the Michigan State football team, Alex?
Honestly, there needs to be something shaken up, and I think Mark D'Antonio is addressing it. Is it the right move to bench Fowler? I don't know about benching. I still think that he should probably be a starter, but 3-6 drop passes is pretty bad.
That's bad. I think it's the right move. I tell you what, because one, it sends a message to the team. With this move, you send the top receiver on the Michigan State football team. You sit him on the bench to let the other receivers and the team know that no position is safe. No position on this squad is safe, especially with the way they played in that Western game. And, of course, you know, the lag. This all lags over. All of these problems lag over to this season, especially with the receiving core. And you talk about Benny Fowler, who when Cunningham left, B.J. Cunningham left, Fowler was supposed to be that guy. He was supposed to be the number one receiver for the Michigan State football team. He was supposed to transition into that role as the man. And he simply has not done it. There's been multiple drop passes from him. You know, and then you talk about jitters. Quote, unquote, jitters. That's supposed to be gone as a senior for the Michigan State football team. As a senior, you just got to go out there and handle business. Jitters? That's your excuse for dropping passes?
Not just that, but Fowler has played in the position last year.
Exactly. You should not have jitters against Western Michigan as your premier game of the season. Your start, you know, start to the season against Western Michigan. Jitters should be gone.
It's not just Western. It's the fact that he played a whole year.
Exactly. You
and
played
went
a whole
jitters
year
in the Boise State game.
Exactly. Come on now. You got it. You got that. That should not be an excuse. And I do think this is the right move. McGarrett Kings, he showed flashes that he's a great route runner from what I've seen. Looks as though he's a great route runner. His hands, I don't know. He hasn't been targeted that much to maybe D'Antonio sees something in practice to throw him in there. But from what I've seen from McGarrett Kings, I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll see this upcoming game. But I think this is a great message that Mark D'Antonio is sending to his team, saying that, hey, no position is safe. Benny Fowler, yes, you were, quote-unquote, the number one receiver on this team, but you haven't been producing, so I'm going to sit you down. And that lets everybody know that you have to be on your game at all times.
I totally agree, Al. And here's the other thing I look at this. You saw the injury, high ankle sprain to Monty Medeiros, who was probably going to compete for some playing time.
Right.
Then the Burbridge injury on top of that. And then D'Anthony Arnett, where has he been?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean,
there are definitely other receivers on this team that could play.
That definitely could play, and they have to step up now. And, you know, Benny's, I mean, if you look at last year, it's certainly been, and the year before that, I mean, his career as an MSU wide receiver has certainly been a roller coaster as he tries to find his niche on the team. But, hey, you got to catch footballs. You got to catch the ball out there, and you can't let jitters get to you when you're out there on the field. Come on, man, you're a senior. Benny, you are a senior. Jitters should be the last thing on your mind. Go out there, do your job. I'm tired of the excuses for this MSU football team.
Hey, let's ask the listeners.
Yeah, I definitely encourage them to call 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Do you think this is the right move? Benching wide receiver Benny Fowler and putting in receiver McGarrett Kings. I think it's a great message to the team, if anything, from a message standpoint. I think it's the right move for this team.
Now let's talk about this for a second. We see Benny Fowler bench, then you see the or Connor Cook.
Yeah.
Does that hint that Connor Cook might be starting?
I know, right?
Is this a game time decision?
It could be, and you know what? If it does happen, you owe me some Chipotle, brother. You definitely owe me some Chipotle.
I might need to take a loan out of the WKAR.
A loan for Chipotle? Chipotle is not that expensive. Come on now.
All right.
But anyway, but yeah, I mean, no position. There's the question marks. When it boils down to it, and you talk about the MSU football team, there's two question marks on this team: QB and receiver. That's it. Defense plays great. Running backs, I like what I saw from the running backs.
I don't know, Al. I think there are a couple offensive line holes.
But they're not big. There's no question marks on that offensive line.
Sure.
I don't think there's question marks on that offensive line. Right now, there's huge, huge question marks as far as the quarterback role is concerned and the receiving core is concerned. Right now, and if they don't get that nailed down, it's going to be a long, long season for many Spartan fans out there. So, I don't know. We'll see what transgresses. But right now, again, we want to get your thoughts on Benny Fowler being benched and McGarrett Kings being put in as a starting receiver. Again, 517-355-9527. I actually asked a question on our Facebook page. We had a few comments. Not a few. We actually had an overwhelming response of comments. Now, the last time I checked, it was an hour ago, there were just a few comments. Now, there are so many. Spencer Ray says, the wide receivers aren't the problem. D'Antonio needs to pick a QB and be all in with his choice. Liberty Bell says, play someone other than Maxwell. Marvin Yates Jr. says, after underperforming last year and the ton of drops Fowler and all of the receivers had last year, they are all on a short leash. Fowler being a fifth-year senior and having such an impressive spring/summer, they were expecting him to come out and produce and be a leader. With that terrible first game, it just shows how serious Coach D is. Produce, improve on the issues from last year, or you will be demoted until you prove yourself. Totally agree. Maddie Finch says, agreed, we are missing a QB leader, making our offense seem like one huge gray area in terms of competitiveness. Looking around the country at successful teams right now, they all have a fairly definite QB situation. Most concerning in our own conference is Michigan. Devin Gardner has as much talent as anyone. So I could go on and on. Austin McMurray says, looking at stats last season, wide receivers dropped close to 6 passes last season and near 10 or so this game. So it is really the QB as much as we say it is. Is it really the QB as much as we say it is? Maxwell isn't the best, but he's not the main problem. He gets the ball out there and receivers drop it.
So here's what I get out of this. And there's something I want to touch on that I started on yesterday that I think is very important. D'Antonio said, we won't see a third quarterback unless the score
Yeah, you keep going back to that.
But think about this. You keep hearing someone else besides Maxwell. You might as well play bad Maxwell or Cook, because the worse you play, the more you'll solidify your job. Think about that. If you can't put in a third quarterback, if D'Antonio won't play a third quarterback, unless the score is a blowout or it's a big lead, then if you're Maxwell or Cook, you might as well just keep doing the way you're doing, and it'll be a two-man race.
So their jobs, as far as the four-man race, you think that's not even going to happen?
Think about that, though.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I think it is a two-horse race right now. I don't think we're going to see, like you said, I mean, D'Antonio said it himself. You're not going to see it unless it's a huge, huge blowout. I mean, and the thing about it is, like I said yesterday, I don't think that Damian Terry or Tyler O'Connor are going to get any playing time, just simply because I don't think you're going to see any blowouts with the Michigan State football team, because the offense can't produce points, period. I mean, that's what it comes down to. The only points that are coming from MSU, period, is on the defensive end due to interception, fumbles, things of that nature. So it's a really frustrating situation. And I tell you what, that defense, you got to tip your hat off to that defense, because they go out there and win games for MSU's football team. They go out there and get the job done. Just think about where this team would be without that defense. Wow. I don't even want to think. That's a nightmare on Elm Street.
If we didn't have that defense, it'd probably be a Western win.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Take away two touchdowns.
Without a doubt, man. That's a nightmare on Elm Street. A nightmare on Sparty Street, all right?
Spartan Street.
Yeah, that's crazy. Again, let us know what you think about it. 517-355-9527. All right. Well, let's move on to Michigan. Let's talk about Michigan a little bit. Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly changed his mind on Tuesday, calling the Fighting Irish series against Michigan, quote, a great and historic rivalry. Now, the statement made during his weekly news conference was contrary to what he said during a teleconference on Sunday, when he said, quote, I really haven't seen it as one of those historic traditional Notre Dame rivalries. Going on to call it a big regional game. Why do you think the change of tone right now for Brian Kelly?
Man, you look at this Notre Dame series.
He's probably thinking about Moolah.
They've been going since 1978 and even before then.
Yeah.
These are the two winningest programs in NCAA history.
History right now. I don't know. Why would he make those comments? I mean, I think when you look at it, I guess he's trying to downplay it to make it seem like, you know, they all count one. You know,
look,
they all count one.
Kelly's a Cincy guy.
Right, true.
He's desensitized to the rivalry. He's desensitized to the tradition.
Right. I mean, a lot of coaches do that, though. I mean, when Michigan plays MSU, you know, with the whole in-state rivalry that MSU has with Michigan, Michigan tries to downplay the whole Michigan State, the little brother.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They all count one, you know. When you look at the history when these past few years, other than last year, I mean, Michigan State's owned Michigan on the football field. So that's going to be a very interesting. But coaches do that all the time. So I think the reason why he's changing the tone, because this is a primetime game. There's a lot of moolah involved. Let me take that back. I mean, and it's the last time Michigan and Notre Dame will be matching up, you know, in this whole quote-unquote rivalry. This is the last game we're going to see from them. So you got to hype it up a little bit. I think that's why he changed his tune. So now last season, Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick, he handed Michigan athletic director Dave Brandon a letter on the field before last season's game, canceling scheduled games from 2015 to 2017. And in May, Michigan coach Brady Holt told a luncheon crowd in Grand Rapids in May that Notre Dame was chickening out of the series. Kelly said that he hasn't spoken to Holt about the series since Notre Dame announced it was ending it, but said he doesn't believe Holt meant any disrespect. He says, quote, he's never been one to show disrespect to anybody or anything. It's really, for me, about two programs that share a border that it makes sense to play. I get that. It's just there's so many complexities with our schedule and our agreement with the ACC that it's difficult and frustrating. I can see the frustration that would be there. Now, Kelly said playing a tough schedule is important, noting that the Irish replaced Michigan with Texas in 2015-2016 and in 2019-20. Now, he claims this is the goal in heading to a national championship game and making a good strength of the schedule.
Now, that's just funny. You replaced Texas for Michigan, and you're saying that that's a bigger strength of schedule?
Yeah, come on, man. We're talking about Michigan
here.
Come on. Michigan,
and,
when, like
and
you
you're
said,
talking Moolah. I get the Longhorn Network, but come on for a second.
There's nothing like a Michigan game, I tell you that, man. I don't know if I agree with Kelly on this one.
No.
Well, we
no.
have a. I don't at all. I don't agree with Kelly at all. But okay, all right, let's take a break. We still have a lot to get to. Again, give us a call here at the station, 517-355-9527. Give us your opinions on anything being discussed here today. Stick around. More current sports is coming up right at you.
About 10 gunshot victims arrive at Temple University Hospital each week. Trauma Chief Dr. Amy Goldberg and Youth Counselor Scott Charles started the Cradle to Grave program to try to stop the cycle of violence by taking young people at risk into the trauma center and describing the medical realities of gunshot wounds. We'll talk with them and a gunshot victim on the next Fresh Air.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We are currently in our current sports section of the show, where we list the biggest topics in the sporting world. Let's move on now to Isaac Redman. Steelers coach Mike Tomlin confirmed Tuesday that Isaac will open the season as the team's starting running back. Redman played in the Steelers' first preseason game only as he was hampered by a pinched nerve in his shoulder. The former undrafted free agent practiced fully Monday and said he's ready for a full workload. Now, former Spartan Le'Veon Bell is recovering from a mid-foot sprain. He is out of a walking boot, and Tomlin said there's a chance Bell could take part in some individual drills this week in practice. Now, Tomlin says, quote, "We know what Isaac is capable of. He's answered the bell for us in the past. We expect him to do it in a big way moving forward." Now, Redman opened last season as a starting running back, but finished with just 410 yards and 2 scores and averaged only 3.7 yards per carry. So right now, I think they're just using Isaac, until Le'Veon gets back. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Le'Veon Bell on the field. I mean, the preseason reports on Le'Veon were through the roof. Of course, you know, when you talk about Steeler Nation is known for that, for having power backs that can just take the ball and just run. And that's exactly what Le'Veon Bell was for MSU last season as he led the nation in carries. So Le'Veon Bell, he looks to be recovering just fine. But in the meantime, Isaac Redman will be the Steelers' starting running back. All right, U.S. Open update. Defending champion Serena Williams. Serena Williams has been unbelievable, folks. This is the best I've ever seen Serena Williams on the tennis court. She just completely just demolished, wasn't even close. And I do mean that literally. She just demolished Carla Suarez Navarro, the 18th seed. Get this, 6-0. It took less than an hour, Alex. Less than an hour. I mean.
And the funny thing.
Come on, man.
This is an 18th seed. This isn't an unranked. This is the 18th seed. 6-0.
Right. Crazy, right? In less than an hour. I mean, that's great. That's mind-blowing to me. And this was on. I mean, this is not a great birthday present for Navarro. It was her birthday yesterday. Williams is 31 and is in so she's just head above heels better than everyone else in the world right now. Is she just coasting through things right now? Williams will face number 5 Lina, who needed 3 sets to get by number 24 Markarova. Now on the men's side, number 9 Stanislas Wawrinka. These names
Wawrinka.
Are
Wawrinka. Stanislas. Stanislas Al.
Thank you. There you go. You got the accent and everything, Alex. Who scored the only upset of the night with a 3-6-6-1-7-6-6-2 win over Thomas Berdichi. Am I saying that right?
Burdick.
Thank you.
Thomas.
I am bad at names, people. I am terrible. Anyone who knows me knows I am terrible at names. Sorry, Thomas. Earlier that day, number one seed Novak Djokovic, I know that name, made like Serena and dispatched Marcel Granollers 6-3, 6-0, 6-0 to reach the quarterfinals. So Serena certainly rolling. Novak Djokovic, again, he's rolling himself, the two favorites to win it. Did we pick a winner of the U.S. Open?
I don't think we
made that in our pick'ems.
No.
We definitely slipped on that one. All right, I believe we have John from Holt on line one. John, welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, first time caller. How you doing today?
How you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Nice.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I think they should shake up the receiving corps a little more, man. I'd like to see a guy like Matt Maxue get a chance. Guys like that are there every practice working hard, they deserve a chance, I think, against a terrible team like South Florida that got clubbed by McNeese State. Why not give some of those other guys an opportunity?
Right. Totally agree. Totally agree with John on that one.
John, I just want to know from you, who is going to be that starter? I mean, are you happy with McGarrett Kings? Is there another guy on this team you think should start?
I think Arnett has a lot of potential, man, but they don't play him that much for some reason. I mean, he hasn't proven to be great, but I think that D'Anthony Arnett's a very solid receiver, as proved by his career at Tennessee. But they didn't get much of a chance last year.
And you know what, John, before I let you go, who do you think is going to be the starting quarterback for these MSU football team?
No.
I got to ask him.
I think it might be Cook. That's what in my opinion, I think Cook's going to get the start against South Florida for sure.
I totally agree. Boom shakalaka. All right, John. Thanks a lot for the call, John. Appreciate
it. Take care. Yeah, thanks.
Al, did you plan that call out?
I
didn't. You were smiling before he said
it. You think I planned it, John?
Just asked him.
I was just feeling the moment. Let me just throw it out there and see what he thinks.
Oh, okay.
Because obviously Maxwell was not the guy. I'm just saying. All right, LeBron. LeBron James. LeBron James plans to explore an interesting avenue, to say the least. He's going to start up a sitcom, Alex. He's going to produce a sitcom as part of, it's going to be called, quote, Survivor's Remorse. It's going to be a new show he's developing with stars. So this is a premium show. Now, while he won't star in the half-hour sitcom, he'll be one of the executive producers of the show, which will explore the lives of two men from the streets who attain fame. One is an NBA star and one is not. And they're going to explore how they deal with friends and families in the wake of success. LeBron was quoted as saying, "I think the main thing for me is, first of all, making it out of a place where you're not supposed to. You're supposed to be a statistic and end up like the rest of the people in the inner city. And me being one of the few to make it out and everyone looking at you to be the savior." That was LeBron in a phone interview last week. Now, he went on to say, when you make it out, everyone expects for, they automatically think that when you make it out, it's very tough. It's very, very tough for a young African-American 18-year-old kid to now hold the responsibility of a whole city, of a whole community. I can relate to that as well. So LeBron, of course, he was 18 when he came to the NBA and is now a 28-year-old veteran in the NBA, arguably one of the most, he's one of the most popular athletes in the entire world. Now, James is developing the new show with his longtime friend and business partner, Maverick Carter. Others working on the show are Tom Werner, the producer behind the classic show Roseanne, The Cosby Show, and also actor Mike O'Malley, who will be an executive producer and also one of the show's writers. The show is based in North Philadelphia instead of Akron, Ohio, where the two are from. And they say that it being in Philadelphia, more people can relate to it. That's very interesting there. I'm going to tune in.
I'll be tuning in.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if I have stars.
I think it's funny that LeBron is an executive producer.
It is.
Do you think he knows how to handle a can?
No, like not at all. Not one clue. But he's probably going to be sitting back throwing out ideas more or less. Yeah. So
he's the PR face.
Right, exactly. All right, Michael Beasley. Michael Beasley, the number two overall pick of the 2008 draft, was released by the Phoenix Suns in the wake of his recent arrest on suspicion of marijuana possession. Now, after clearing waivers, Beasley will become a free agent after averaging a career low 10.1 points, 3.8 rebounds, and 40.5% shooting in his lone season with Phoenix. Now, he played two seasons, each with Miami and Minnesota before signing a three-year deal with Phoenix worth $18 million in the summer of 2012. Now, by waiting until after September 1st to waive Beasley, Phoenix can now pay out the $6 million owed to the 24-year-old forward in the 2013-2014 season on the NBA's standard pay schedule and then stretch the remaining $3 million guaranteed on Beasley's deal. Now, new Suns general manager Ryan
McDonough.
Thank you. All right. Was said to be eager. We should just compile all over the shows, over time, all the names I've screwed up on the show.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be hilarious.
Thanks for the idea. Aaron, remember that one.
Oh, gosh. Aaron's writing it down right now. All right. He was said to be eager to move Beasley out as part of the ongoing reboot in Phoenix in the wake of last season's 25-57 mark. They were terrible last year. So, all right, Jared Sullinger, more drama in the NBA when it comes to NBA players here. Massachusetts prosecutors say Boston Celtics forward Jared Sullinger has been arrested on domestic violence-related charges. Now, a spokeswoman for the Middlesex District Attorney's Office says that Sullinger is scheduled to be arraigned Tuesday in Waltham. Now, police say officers were called to Sullinger's residence on Saturday evening for a domestic assault call. Now, police described the alleged victim as his girlfriend. Sullinger was not at the time home when they arrived, and a warrant was issued for his arrest. He turned himself in about 6 a.m. Tuesday and was booked on charges of assault and battery, and also malicious destruction of property and witness intimidation. Now, Sullinger, if you look at this account, going in more detail, his girlfriend said that Sullinger actually pushed her, and she was trying to leave, and Sullinger got on top and kind of restrained her, and she got up, and he somehow, like, pushed her, and she ended up injuring, she had marks on her neck when police arrived and everything. I mean, that really surprised me, because, I mean, Sullinger's not known as a guy who, is really out there and erratic. So this really surprised me. But, when you talk about love, man, love makes you do crazy things.
And it also proves you never really know people behind closed doors.
That's very, very true. And Sullinger says they were college sweethearts. They go back, of course, Sullinger played, at Ohio State. He says that his girlfriend, they were college sweethearts dating back way to his college days. So you never know what love will make you do. I'm just glad no one was hurt. All right. Smith and Manuel. Geno Smith has gotten the call to start in week one for the Jets against the Buccaneers, the team announced on Wednesday. Now, the last time the Jets started a rookie was week one of 2009 when Mark Sanchez, whom Smith is replacing, got to start. Now, the Buffalo Bills also on Wednesday named rookie E.J. Manuel as their starting quarterback for Sunday's opener against the New England Patriots. Manuel, the first quarterback chosen in April's draft, underwent a minor procedure on his left knee on August 18th and missed the team's final two preseason games. Now, the 16th overall pick was a combined 26 of 33, passing for 199 yards and two touchdowns without an interception.
It's great.
Yeah, I know. That's very, very impressive. The Bills spent last week scrambling to add quarterbacks by signing free agent veteran Matt Leinart and acquiring Thaddeus Lewis in a trade with the Detroit Lions. Now, Leinart was cut on Friday, a day after he struggled in a preseason loss to no other than the Lions. So, also, Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world. Usain Bolt is considering retiring after the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. Now, Bolt has completely dominated the competitive world of sprinting since claiming three gold medals at the 2008 Beijing Games, but hinted ahead of Friday's season-ending Diamond League meet in Rio that this will be his third and last. So he also added that, quote, "Now that I'm getting a bit older, I know that I have to stay injury-free, maintain focus, and act responsibly." Bolt added that any plans for the 2014 season, a year with no global championships, would be taken in October after he had taken some time off. So really not a surprise for me there. I mean, Bolt has had a really, really just fascinating career. Watching him run is like watching, you're watching greatness. You're
is he faster than Al Jordan?
See, the thing about me is I'm quick. I am not fast. Not a sprinter whatsoever, man. It's so there's a lot of technique in sprinting that, goes unsaid in many instances. I mean, the way you move your arms, how you come off the blocks. That's not me.
Did
I'm quick.
Did you run track?
I didn't run track. I was a straight up just Al Jordan throughout my entire high school career, just played basketball. So, and this, you know what, Alex, this is a very funny story. This story to me is hilarious. Yeah, I know, right? Exactly. Cleveland Indians, two-time All-Star closer, Chris Perez, he pleaded no contest and was convicted Tuesday of misdemeanor drug abuse for marijuana shipped to his home in the family dog's name. So Perez decided to send marijuana to his home with his dog's name on the package. Perez withdrew his not guilty plea in Rocky River Municipal Court outside Cleveland and was found guilty and fined $250. Wow, that's it. I thought it would be more than that. Okay. He was also placed on probation for 1 year and was ordered to speak to youngsters about drugs.
He had some great lawyers.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. $250, and you just got to talk to some kids. I mean, what are you going to tell the kids? I mean, don't mail marijuana to your dog.
Don't mail marijuana unless it's your dog.
that's crazy to me. That's great. Now, Judge Brian Hagen said, quote, "You are highly regarded. Kids look up to you, but you made a big mistake. I hope that through your efforts, you can deter someone else from making that same mistake." Now, postal inspectors tipped off police about suspicious packages mailed to the Perez home. They say Perez's wife, Melanie, accepted two packages with about a third of a pound of marijuana. So this is not the first time this has happened. Authorities say Melanie, whose maiden name is Baum, told the undercover officer delivering the packages that they were intended for her dog named Brody. Now, the package was addressed to Brody Baum. That's hilarious to me. According to investigators, Perez told drug agents with a search warrant that he had pot for personal use and pointed out two jars. Asked about any drugs or weapons by officers who went to the Perez home, Perez said, quote, "volunteered to direct the officers to the location of it." Now, Perez is participating in the treatment program and is subject to regular drug tests. Now, the 20-year-old Perez has 21 saves on the season and 25 opportunities with a 3.15 ERA. So, everyone listening out there, please do not deliver marijuana to your dog, or you will get caught. I guess that's the message in this entire story. That's bizarre.
Bizarre.
That's beyond bizarre. Now, we had a whole Barbershop Wednesday planned, but, I mean, there was so much going on in the world of sports. We just had to, you know, just go with the flow and deliver those current sports topics. Again, we encourage you on our Facebook page. We are asking whether or not Benny Fowler being benched and starting McGarrett Kings is the right move for the MSU football team. We've had an overwhelming response from you all. Some blaming, you know, saying, hey, it's not on the receivers, it's the quarterbacks. Some saying, hey, this is the right move. Some saying, hey, yeah, get rid of them all. I mean, these comments range from everything. So definitely sparking up a lot of conversation. Again, it's facebook.com/currentsports. You can tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Give us a call anytime here, 517-355-9527. Or if you happen to be at work on your laptop and you want to shoot me an email, always, my email is always open at almartin@wkar.org. Well, folks, it's about that time. Yes, 2 o'clock is rolling around and we have to say goodbye. Before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharg and Matt Ludke, our production assistants. Engineer Aaron Young. Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to MSU volleyball coach Kathy George. She was great. Thanks, Kathy, for joining us. Same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Hey, take care. Have a great day. And as always, be easy, people.